really dear friend of mine is in class today, Swami Ganeshananda, sitting right behind you. You can all look if you want to look. That's him. He's from Oslo, Norway. He teaches in Oslo. He teaches in Mallorca. And soon will be teaching in Switzerland. And we go back to the early days of Rudy. We're as close as you can get to being brothers who are not biologically brothers. And he came to America a week ago, taught a class at Tibet House in New York, and asked if I would come and talk, which I did. And then I took a class with him. And I realized that I hadn't taught a class or taken a class with somebody else in what is close to 30 years. And sitting with him was one of the most wonderful, extraordinary experiences that I've had, akin to the days when Rudy was teaching. And it was, as you know, you can describe it as psychedelic. I mean, it was full of bright light and transformation and a kind of ethereal beauty that was just remarkable. And I really loved it. And Swamiji was, he carries so much of Rudy in him, and he was talking many of the things that Rudy would talk about. And it was a very rich experience for me to be immersed back in that classical teaching. And one of the things that I experienced being with him was this thing Rudy talked about a lot, which I don't think I've talked about at all, or maybe not for years, which is this experience of the teacher as a furnace available to burn up your shit, basically. That you can toss all of your crap into the furnace of the teacher, who burns it up for you and brings back to you a kind of purified, clarified, clean energy. And I've had to, over the years, because I haven't had a teacher, do that for myself, which of course is a very extraordinary thing to do, just because it's a mechanism you would like to probably have for yourself, to be able to take care of your own situation. But boy, was it wonderful to sit with somebody who was willing to take your shit. And so I just sat there and I just dumped everything that was coming up that didn't need to be there. And I had this gift of giving it away, the burden just getting lighter and lighter and lighter. And I don't carry that much of a burden, but there were pieces that were, I could feel them coming up and going, phew, phew. And I just felt, excuse me, unendingly grateful to have somebody who does that for you. Because we don't have that in life usually. Mostly we dump our shit on the people closest to us and they get angry. And they have a hard time with it. They don't know what to do with it except throw it back at you again in some other form. And so you have this constant ship balancing thing, and it's terrible. But a teacher doesn't do that. A teacher just transforms it and gives it back to you in a way that is digestible for you again. Not that you won't create more, because most of us do that all the time. But it's an opportunity to get rid of stuff. And Rudy used to describe it with a metaphor which works very well in this house, as he used to feel when he was burning up his own shit that it was like a train that would pull in, he would dump everything on, and it would carry away. And as you probably notice in this class, when a train goes by, I take total advantage of that. So I just throw it all on board the train, and the train just goes. You know, it has no idea what it's carrying, but it's such a gift. It's such a gift to be able to be free of all of that stuff. And I really am so grateful in my life, because one, I had a teacher who took enough of my stuff in the beginning to allow me to feel lighter on my feet, to feel that I didn't have to carry endlessly the burden of being Bruce. And we all carry the burden of being who we are, because we don't know anything else. Because we come into this world and we become someone. We become someone with a name, with a sex, with a personality, with a particular kind of education, with certain amounts of tension that are created in our life by our parents, our grandparents, our friends, our siblings, everybody. And so we are shaped, sometimes lovingly, sometimes not lovingly, into this person who we begin to believe we are. This is who we are. And then the body comes and forms itself around us, and we feel, you know, I am beautiful, I'm not beautiful, I'm perfect, I'm not perfect, most of us not perfect and not beautiful. And we suffered that. And you know, life becomes heavier and heavier. We carry more and more stuff with us all the time. And we become a little bit like, I describe it, Scrooge and Marley were partners in Dickens' Christmas Carol, and Marley died. And Marley appears to Scrooge at one point, and he is a dead figure burdened with the weight of his being. He's just burdened by it. And in one staging I saw of it, you know, you saw him just completely covered in chains and you just felt, oh, poor guy. But then in one version I saw, he was carrying those chains. It wasn't that they were trapped around him, he was holding them. And he was walking around like, oh my God, in the afterlife, which, you know, is bad enough in life, but there he is carrying this stuff. And I said, just let go, just let go. You know, just let him go. He had no concept. He had no concept that you could let those chains go. And his burden was great. And all of us essentially are like Marley. We all walk around with the chains of our life around us, all of the burdens, the guilt, the things we did 25 years ago that you can't even look at, that are just closed in a door that isn't just closed, it's being held shut in almost everybody. And we deal with enormous amounts of energy trying to hide ourselves from how horrible we feel, how difficult our lives are, how burdensome they are. And having an opportunity to let go of the burden, having an opportunity to have somebody come and just be available to you to say, here, throw it at me. It's an extraordinary thing. And not a lot of people make themselves available for that. But Swamiji and I were talking this morning, and, you know, and Rudy would say this directly, your shit is my energy. I grind it up. And it grinds up, and who grows from that? I grow from that. This persona space that I am expands through that, and you are free of it. So you become more expansive as well. It's a wonderful exchange. It's as good as it gets, really. And we're all here looking for that in life. And who provides it? Where do you go to have that happen? I mean, you know, a shrink? You know, you go to a shrink, you go to the bartender, you know, and you just throw your stuff out. But he just hands you another drink, and the shrink just listens to you and listens. And so there's an intellectual component. And I, you know, I support all this. I support therapy, and I support the idea of digging into this stuff any way you can. But ultimately, giving it away is different than just exposing it. Letting it go is really at the core. Let go of your stuff, because it's you who's grasping it. It's you who's holding it. And there's another element that was talked about in Swamiji's class last week, which I don't refer to often, but it's really valuable. And it's called the horizontal and the vertical. You don't mind if I'm stealing from our teacher, do you? The horizontal and the vertical is a really interesting image, and it's something Rudy talked about a lot, that we live life on a very big horizontal plane, and it's our day-to-day existence. And most of us function in that existence on a daily basis, and most of us function with some vague level of accomplishment. You know, we know how to drive a car, maybe. We know how to be at a cocktail party, how to talk to people. We know how to prepare for an exam. You know, those things that this flat level horizontal of our life is about, we deal with fairly well. Although I will tell you, this last couple months of my life, which have been unbelievably tumultuous, of change, real change, of letting go of one big house taking all the stuff from that house or a lot of it and putting it in another house, doing it with help from people, but ultimately just Blanche and I doing a lot of the work. It's exhausting. And we've been exposed to enormous numbers of people. And mostly what I've seen is how messed up people are. How unbelievably messed up the horizontal is. People don't function well. They're angry at each other, they're angry at themselves. Day-to-day life is frightening, it's scary, they don't know quite how to get through it. They try to take control of it wherever they can, but it's uncontrollable. It has no center that holds, which I think is a very important idea. The horizontal, everyone seeks safety in a horizontal, but the horizontal level of life is endlessly changing and ultimately kills you. You know, you don't survive it, the horizontal, at all. So we all walk around knowing that, and we're all traumatized by that, but we're all looking at everybody else being totally normal, so we go, oh, you know, maybe I can, you know, be normal. And you try to, and we're all playing this incredible thing of being, well, I'm fine, how are you fine? You know, you're fine, but you're not fine, you're terrified by existential truth that you're not going to be here forever. You don't know how long you're going to be here, and at any moment it could be over, and that's a terrible thing. It's really scary. Then we have this vertical. And the vertical occurs, you take a breath, this practice that we have, take a breath and ask for help to surrender. What are you asking to surrender? You're asking to surrender, really, the horizontal, the entrapment of the horizontal. You just, for 10 seconds, you just want to get above it. And so you take a breath and you start to feel this thing, which is really kind of compelling. You go, you rise out of it and you look down and you go, oh my God, it's really a shithole. You know, none of this is working. I mean, look at this all. And you see the patterns of it, you see the drama of it, you see all this stuff, and you go, wow, how do people get through this? And then you finish meditating and you're back in it. And you go, and you realize that elevation was really good. I liked rising out of that place because I got to see it in a way that I've never seen it before. I saw the patterns. I see the stuff we do to each other. I got a real clear picture. And then if you keep working that, something really interesting happens. You rise out of that horizontal and you enter a new, you rise from the vertical into a new horizontal. It's another level of existing. And that level of existing is quieter, cleaner, purer, more spiritual, you might say. And you can look down at the world and look at it from a very different perspective. And occasionally you'll sink back into it, but you know you have this wonderful ability, as Rudy would say, take a breath, and you rise up and you go back into that horizontal. But Rudy was very clear about this. He said, don't build your house on that new horizontal, because it's not the end of the journey. He said, everybody wants to have their picture in Life magazine. He said, but you get your picture in Life magazine and you build a house on Schitt's Creek, is what he said. It's a crazy thing. There's a lot of shit in today's talk. And I apologize. But it's very essential, because that's in the deepest sense what it is. You get to this new place and you form a new identity, and it's sweeter, it's lighter, it's more available to something bigger. And you feel, wow, this is great. And then some people write a book and start to teach, and they do all sorts of things from this new level. But it's a limited level. Why? Because there's infinite vertical. There's infinite vertical and there's endless horizontals. If you look at Tibetan paintings, you'll see pictures of it. They have, you know, these things that go out and out and out. And you can keep going to higher and higher and higher levels. The problem with going to higher and higher and higher levels in spiritual work is that there's always another level. Not that that's a bad thing, but there is always somewhere else to get to. And so there's a constant striving. I'm not saying that's in and of itself bad, but it keeps you imbalanced in a way. It keeps you destabilized, because you never feel any kind of arrival. You become what Rudy called a perpetual seeker. He said what he wanted was finders. Not seekers, finders. And what do you want to find in all of this? What's the thing you want to find? And I can only talk about my own experience, which came out of not finding. Seeking for 40, almost 50 years of practice I've been doing. And not for so many of those years, finding the thing I was going to get to, because it was always somewhere else. That's a good thing on some level, because I am working and working and working and building and building, and I have a very strong foundation and a very big structure supporting a very, very real perspective on the world. I can look down at levels in myself, and I can look at levels in each of you. I can see where the foundation's not strong. I can feel where there's a knot in a life part of your life that's holding you back that you can't see, and I can actually go in and unleash that. I don't know how that's done, but it's come out of 50 years of practice. But what finally happened for me, and this is a boring story, you all know it already, is this thing, this awakening thing, which is the awakening thing gets rid of the person who's seeking. You get rid of this individual person who wants to get to that level. And the problem that everyone really experiences is that every level you go to doesn't want you. You are the problem with every level. As you go to another level, you got to drop off more of yourself in order to go there. But the seeking self that wants to get to the top level is the ultimate problem. And it's the ultimate problem because it can't get entry into the ultimate. Why? Because it sees itself as separate from all of this. It sees itself as being somehow something that will ultimately be given all of this knowledge, all of this awareness, all of this attainment, and it will think, ah, I finally have it. And what really seems to take place in my experience is when you get closer to that place, your obstruction is completely self-made. It's your identity and your need to find it and hold it and be it and walk around with the robes that say, I am that. And what seems to appear in my experience is that in order to enter the absolute, that seeker has to disappear. Finally, you have to let go of you. And you've done it work. You've done all this work. Letting go, letting go, letting go. But there's still this crux of I am this person. And only when that breaks apart, only when it finally just disappears or is shattered or whatever image you want to use, does this thing happen where you are free of you and one with all that is. The only difference between where you were the day before that happened and the day that happens is that when you are one with all there is, there's no more you and it. There's just it. There just is, basically, the verb, being. That's all. What is what you are. And it is a mind-numbing truth. And therefore, the mind is taken out of the equation because the mind can't get it. There just is the truth. And it's incomprehensible in every way, except for the fact that you are that. You are all there is. You have always been all there is. Whatever that may mean to you in your mind, which is trying to make sense of what I'm saying, get rid of the trying to make sense. At some point, pa, there it is. And it is not the goal or end of spiritual work. It is at the very core of spiritual work. You are still there. It's just not filled with your name. It's not filled with your ambition. It's not filled with your sense of attainment. It's just there. Yes, sometimes it becomes crowded again. Yes, you can go back to ground level and feel all the bullshit stuff of life. Yes, that can all happen. But it's all part of this. You are the ground level life, and you are the infinite clarity, infinite beauty, all at the same time. You can't grasp what that means. You cannot understand it. Don't even try. All I can say is at some point, every created being will know this. Every created entity, manifested form, will know this. More clearly, you will be it. And even more clearly, you are it. Even as I speak, you are it. Do you know that? Some of you do, some of you don't. Are you here for a reason? Yes, because you want it. You really want it. And all I can tell you, which is what all the sages tell you, is you're it. You're already there. You're already it. Your lack of knowing that or being that with some kind of real clarity is just, it's just the way it works. At some point you're going to know it. And it will be something unexplainable. It'll just happen. You will find it out. Why? Because it's how the universe is structured. It wants you to know this. There's a reason you guys are sitting here now, because you are seeking this. I have to tell you, having spent, you know, the last few months in the bottom level of all of this, you're rare. You are very rare. There are not a lot of people looking clearly for what we're talking about. Most people are thinking if they can just get another something at Starbucks, they'll be fine. You know, one more, I can't remember what the names of all their drinks are. But you look for these things that will take care of you. Or, you know, the hot fudge sundae, get laid, get whatever it is that you're going, it's going to take care of your needs. It's so not what is real. It's so short term. It's so unfunctional, dysfunctional in so many levels. People on the bottom level don't know. And all you can do is feel unbearable compassion for them, because they don't know. And all you want to do is tell them, give them, help them, lift them up. And none of them are looking to be lifted up. In fact, if you offered them a hand, they would spit at you. They would be angry. They don't want this. They don't want to have to do the work, basically, that comes along. What happens when awareness, awakening, enlightenment occurs is not only are you not freed from all of this, not only do you not just get to a place of, ah, you get to a place of, ah, wow, this is a big thing we're in. This is a big thing that we are, and we're in it collectively. We are deeply collective in this thing we are sharing. And it's only by some percentage of this world body, this universal body, transforming itself that it will be transformed. You don't have to transform 100%. You just got to have some level of change in the consciousness of the universe for it to really shift. It started to happen in the 60s. We all watched it happen. The 60s were really interesting. The psychedelic revolution, the war in Vietnam, all this stuff started to turn the tables. It's happened many times in different cultures, but that was our changing point. And it's, the world started to be different. It really has affected the world. It's a slow motion awakening, but it's happening. And, you know, and you watch all the forces that come up to fight it, you know. It's so interesting because they're talking about legalizing marijuana now. And if you watch the talk shows, wow. I caught one the other night and it was like, they're fighting the battles from the 60s. You know, there's still people who think this is going to ruin the world. It's going to destroy the world. And those people, anyone who smoked marijuana goes, that's not going to destroy the world. You know, it's you know, I mean, yes, it could have some bad consequences, like anything. Aspirin can have bad consequences, but mostly, it's you know, it's, I'm not trying to promote smoking marijuana, but I'm just trying to say we fight these old battles, and it's so funny. But what we want here, and what we're seeing happening, because there's a yoga class in every mall in America now, you know, there's something going on. The culture is shifting. If we can just awaken ourselves, or really allow ourselves to reach to that place where we fall away, the world will shift. The world will be a much higher horizontal than it is for most of us now. And that will be extraordinary. It'll be a really wonderful place to live. But as you all know, those of you who watch the news, global warming, all these things that are going on, all the stuff that's happening, is a result of an unconscious and combative world. What can we do in that unconscious, combative world? Well, you can send money to your politicians, I guess, but you can also take a breath. And enter another horizontal. And you can live there. And then you can take a deeper breath. and enter another horizontal. And you can actually live in this world in a kind of, I won't call it paradisical state, but a much nicer state than a lot of people are living in. And you can begin to share that with people. You can hug people. You can be earnestly real with people. You can tell people you love them. You can be kind to them. You can heal people with your touch. There's so much you can do. Each horizontal offers you more and more awareness and more skill and availability to be of service to the world around you. You don't have to be of service to the whole world. I'll tell you what you have to be of service to. That which appears. That which arises in your life. That's your entire responsibility. It's not to be responsible to go out and become president of the United States, unless that's your karmic thing. It's to be loving and kind to whoever is in the circle immediately around you and a little bit further out and a little bit further out. To really watch who comes into your sphere of vision and be conscious with them. Or a word I love, be present with them. Be present. And that presence from this higher horizontal becomes an extraordinary thing. They don't even know what's going on. It's not like you're exactly an angel, but it's an angelic aspect. You actually are able to go through from this level and reach into this level and give somebody something they don't understand. But if you do it without raising their hackles, if you do it quietly, subliminally almost, something happens. They get a message, if you will, from on high that says, "Ooh, this is a nice person. This is a nice person. I like that. I like how I feel around them." And they'll want to be around you. And they will come closer and closer. And you can feed and nurture and nourish. You don't ever have to talk about spirituality, ever. You don't have to talk about meditation or anything, although it may come up. But all you have to do is express a kind of real kindness and, you know, an acknowledgement of who they are. You need to acknowledge their truth, their humble suffering. And trust me, they are suffering in some way. Not necessarily. I mean, life may be good for them at the moment. You know, they're buying a new house and, you know, the job is good and all, and the kids are fine. You know, you do. You have these wonderful moments where everything is okay. But it will not, cannot, must not last. It ultimately will all be taken away, and everyone knows it, and therefore, you coming from another level into their level and just giving them this embrace speaks volumes of understanding without their knowing that you're teaching anything. It's very simple. And if only two people come into your life that you can do that for, that's two more people than anybody else is reaching for. It's a real thing. Buddha used to talk about out of the millions that come to him, if he could find two people who could really know what he's saying, he would have achieved something. Two people. You know, and here we have a room full of people. And each one of you, I know because I talk to you, I dialogue with you, every one of you has risen to new horizontals. Every one of you are in the process of doing this. All I can tell you is when you finally don't know what more to do, and you really surrender, they'll take you away. Literally, they will take your name, they'll take your memory, they'll take your personality, and what they will leave is you. They will leave you. And I saw it with Rudy, and this was the greatest thing in the last month or two of Rudy's life, and I think I've told this story a billion times, but in the last month of Rudy's life, one of his teachers came up to me, Richard Smith, and said, "The train's leaving the station and you're not on it." And it freaked me out. What does it mean I'm not on it? Things were changing so fast. The horizontals, verticals, horizontal, vertical, horizontal. And I could feel something going on. And I didn't know what to do. And I said to Blanche, "I don't know what to do." And what we decided is that Rudy had initiated these 7 o'clock in the morning classes at his place. And I was living across town. But I told Blanche, "I have to go to this. I have to do this." It was a big deal because I had a new son, and you know, and my life was focused around child rearing and all the and a job and all this stuff. And I would get up every morning at 6 o'clock. For me, that's a big deal. And I would go and get the local bus, and if it was warm out, I would walk. But this was January, where most of this was happening, December, January. And I would take the bus across town. The bus driver and I were the only ones on the bus, so he and I became friends. And I would get off at 14th Street or so, and I would walk over to Rudy's house, and I'd stand outside because I didn't want to ring the doorbell, and I'd just stand there until people came down to the classroom, and they would see me out there, and they would take pity on me, and they'd open the door, and I would walk in and sit in the classroom, and I would have a class with all these wonderful people, really wonderful, wonderful people, young people who were starting to teach. And after class, we would go upstairs for breakfast, and Rudy was always at breakfast, always. And I would just sit there. I'd already had breakfast, and I would just sit there with him, and I'd just look at him. And, you know, for me, looking at Rudy was like staring at the sun on some level, but with those things so you don't hurt your eyes. And I would just be, I would just love this guy so much. And I just sat there while he was having breakfast with everybody, and I didn't even sit at the table. Where all the Shivas were standing along the ledge, I would sit there. And he would always come over to me and give me this big hug afterward. And occasionally he would say, let's go for a walk. And he would come and we would walk to his store. He would hold my hand. And we'd walk down the street together, you know, holding hands, which was very hard to do in those days. But I felt so grateful to hold Rudy's hand. And I would feel myself walking like my feet were not touching the earth at all. And I could feel this closeness. And what I saw happening to Rudy, which was so amazing, was he had become himself. I don't know how to describe that, but he had become who he was supposed to be. He was fully Rudy. He was not the Rudy I had originally met. He was really Rudy. And what that really means is, and it's what happens to all of us, get rid of your story, get rid of your drama, get rid of all of the stuff that's defined you, and the loss of the separate self becomes a complete self. You become completely who you are. And watching that happen in another person showed me that it can happen, how it happens, and he died about a month later. And I felt so lucky that that train didn't leave without me, that I got to be there, and I got to touch the real person that Rudy was, and that has stayed with me from that moment on. So this is a process until it's not. The process is sitting, dumping your shit, getting lighter and lighter and lighter, going from horizontal to horizontal to horizontal to horizontal to horizontal, and then finally letting go of the whole system and being the whole thing at one time. That's what we're doing. And you don't let go of it because there's no you to do it. It happens. And until it happens, it doesn't matter, because just living at that top level is so refined and rarefied and remarkable and exquisite that if it doesn't happen, it doesn't matter. Before my awakening happened, I said, I don't care if I am ever, I don't care about this. And I really didn't. It didn't matter to me. And these people would come up to me and say, you know, you're already awakened. I said, well, okay. I didn't feel it. And then when it finally took place, it was so small. So small. But so absolute. And had it never happened, I would be giving the same talk right now. I would be giving the same talk. It's just that I get one extra perspective. And that extra perspective is meaningful because it holds out enormous hope for everyone to ultimately realize you are not separate from anything or anyone or even from yourself. You are one total absolute truth. And when you live that and become that completely, nothing changes, except it's no longer for you personally that you do it. You do it, you live it for the whole. You live it for the continuity of being that we all are. So Swamiji, thank you for the inspiration for that. And thank you guys all for coming. I will be here next week, and the week after I'm going to Korea for the ghost opening, and then I'll be back the week after that, and maybe through much of December, and then we're going to go off to Seattle and be with the new baby and Talia and try to be of help there. But I'll come back here as often as I can, but I do know that when I'm not here, I leave you in amazingly good hands. That's all I can tell you. The people who sit here, I just know this from experience, when you sit here, you disappear. Not disappear, but your mind, personality, all that stuff is laid aside, and there is a pure energy that comes through. And that energy is essentially something Rudy taught us all to be able to access, and it's free of you for a while. And every teacher who sits here is a free-flowing energy source for to nurture you and to take your crap. It doesn't matter if it's me, it doesn't matter who it is, whoever's sitting here is doing that. So take advantage. Any questions at this point? You know, that always takes everybody by surprise.
Every Sunday there's a
class here.
At 10 o'clock?
10 o'clock. Okay. Yeah, the door is always open and it's available. It's also free, which probably freaks people out. What value can it possibly have if it's free? But also, it's like charging people at a water fountain. How can you charge people for something that flows or for your next breath, you know? $200 and I'll give you some really fresh air. You know, it's such a sad commentary that you charge for something that's not yours and that is free. So anyway, it's available. Anybody who wants it, it's here. Anyone else?
Yeah, and I think we're down to one weeknight class, which is at my house in Los Feliz on Wednesday nights at 8:30.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. I'm going to try to expand those classes one way or another. And we'll talk about that, okay? Because I think people need to have it available. Mm-hmm. And really, if you show up and there's just two people, the teacher and the student, it's not about numbers. It's about quality. It's about content. And it works with two people. It works with 100. It works with 1,000. But it's not about numbers. It's really about just being available. Okay, well, thank you all.
Thank you.